evening. I would like to call to order the Grover Beach City Council meeting for July 17th, 2017. I'll be sitting in tonight for Mayor Scholes, who had a family emergency. If we could all rise and take a moment of silence. With all the kids on vacation, Councilmember Nichols, could you lead us in the pledge, please?
Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
City Clerk, are we ready for a roll call?
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Mayor Scholes is absent. Mayor Shaw.
Here. And could we have the closed session announcements from the city attorney?
Mayor Pro Tem, council members. Council met in closed session on Monday, June 19th. For a conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to subdivision B of section 549-56.9 on two potential cases. At the end, we reconvened in open session, and there were no reportable actions at that time.
All right. Thank you. Okay. At this time, I'd like to review the agenda. Would anyone like to change the order of the agenda?
None here.
I'll make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as published.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We'll accept it as written. All right. Then that brings us to our ceremonial calendar. And first up, we have a proclamation for National Park and Recreation Month. Councilmember Lee, would you like to read this proclamation?
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much. So, proclamation of the City of Grover Beach designating July as National Park and Recreation Month. So, whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities throughout this county, a country, including Grover Beach, and whereas our parks and recreation programs are vitally important to establishing and maintaining the quality of life in our communities, ensuring the health of all citizens, and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of a community and a region. And whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, increase a community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of the local tax base, increased tourism, the attraction and retention of businesses, and crime reduction. Whereas parks and recreation parks and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect groundwater, prevent flooding, improve the quality of the air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, produce habitat for wildlife, ensure the ecological beauty of our community, and provide a place for children and adults to connect with nature and recreate outdoors. And whereas it is established through statewide public opinion research that 98% of California households visit a local park at least once a year. 2 in 3 households visit a park once a month, and 50% of households participate in an organized recreational program, and most park use is with family and friends. And whereas the residents of Grover Beach, including children, youth, families, adults, seniors, businesses, community organizations, and visitors, benefit from the parks, open space, sports fields, and courts, facilities, programs, classes, concerts, and special events provided by our Parks and Recreation Department. Whereas the City of Grover Beach urges all residents to recognize that parks and recreation programs enrich the quality of life for our residents and visitors and add value to our communities, homes, and neighborhoods. So we are proud, therefore, to be a resolved that the Grover Beach City Council recognizes July as National Park and Recreation Month.
Thank you so much for reading that. And I think we have a presentation here by the head of the Parks and Rec Department, Ms. Kathy Petker.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. What we'd like to do is get a picture with you, if that's okay, and then we'd like to give you a presentation.
Okay.
Thank you again. We are very honored to be able to accept this proclamation in honor of July as National Parks and Recreation Month. This is happening all over the country, and we are very fortunate here in the city of Grover Beach to be able to have the opportunity to share all of our parks and programs with the public and help improve their quality of life. We have a presentation here to just all pictures just to quickly show you things that are happening year-round in the city. And all of these things, by the way, could not happen without the help of our Public Works Department and our volunteers. They all help with facilitating programs as well as maintaining and keeping up on the parks. So this year's theme is Get Your Play On, Parks and Recreation Month. So every year is a theme, so we put in a little extra pictures with people playing. So first of all is the preschool program, Tiny Tots. We serve nearly 100 preschool-age children at the Grover Beach Community Center. And this is a picture of our 16th Street Park. Lots of activity happening here. This is our largest barbecue park area. You can rent it for up to 99 people. And we have lots of groups that enjoy this big park. Oops, went too fast. These are our people playing sports. So we've got the adult co-ed volleyball. We've got the Cal Poly women's basketball team doing the clinic. And we just heard word this week that the Cal Poly men's and women's tennis teams are going to be coming out and doing clinics in the fall. This is the ever-popular mother and son dinner dance. It sells out every year. A wonderful evening for mothers and sons to spend the night together. It's special. In the Spring Garden Tour, we honored those participants last month, and this is another awesome opportunity for homeowners to share their landscaping and gardening with the public. And this is another thing that we like to feature, although that the city is not the main sponsor, it is something happening in the city, so we like to share that as an opportunity to the public and the benefits, as well as the Grover Beach Car Show. We're fortunate that we have these nonprofit agencies coming into the city and providing these excellent quality events for the public and the citizens. So. And this is last year's golf camp. This was another popular program that sold out. To just think that we have this beautiful little golf course in Grover Beach and these youth are starting young with the little game. The same with the Lego camp and the art camps. Those are also happening, and we have Lego camp next week, and we are still taking signups if you want to get your child in. And this is our very popular Tai Chi class. This is happening at Grover Heights Park. In the summer, it's at the park, and in the winter, it's inside Ramona Garden Park. And this is Arbor Day. This is educational opportunity to teach kids the importance of trees. State Parks representatives and also the Boys and Girls Club partners with this program. The South County Skate Park. We're so fortunate. Here in the South County, we're the only skate park for all the youth and adults. And now we take scooters. And this was also another popular program, the Adult Paint and Sip program. And we have a waiting list going. If anyone else wants to sign up for the next class, just contact our department. We're so fortunate, again, to have the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. They spend their time and they search the city for beautiful yards to recognize homeowners and residents for the work that they've done. And this is an example of a beautification award this homeowner was receiving. Last year's Bike to Work Day, this was another great partnership with a local business, Trinity Bicycle. And this picture was actually just taken yesterday. This was our concert, and we had close to 500 people there, and it was a great day. And these are every Sunday through September. Come on out, and there's a few vendors there. You can buy some goods and also enjoy. We have some face painting there now for the youth and lots of beautiful, excellent bands entertaining the public. And the Dune Run, Run, and Walk. 10K run, 5K run, 5K walk. That's coming up for the last weekend in August in conjunction with the Stone Soup Music Festival. And here's Mayor Scholes handing out the award for a carved pumpkin contest. And we also have our ever-popular Santa's Workshop and tree lighting ceremony. Our 9/11 ceremony we've done every year since 2012. Holiday parade, and again, Santa's Workshop, first Saturday in December. And again, could not do it all without all of our awesome volunteers, as well as the City Council and the Parks and Rec Beautification Commission and the hundreds of volunteers that come out for every event that helps us. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much. That was a wonderful presentation, and I think as we're all looking at those pictures, so many of us have all attended those events or wished that we had. So thank you. Your group is doing a lot of good work here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I did have one speaker request from Walt French, who is the head of our Parks and Rec Commission. So if you wanted to come on up and speak as well, that would be great.
Hello, Honorable Mayor and City Council, City Staff, and citizens of Grover Beach. I'm Walt French, 1042 Atlantic City in Grover Beach. And I want to thank the city for producing this beautiful trophy, I call it. It's very nice and very thoughtful. And I want to talk to you about not only being a citizen here in Grover Beach, but also being a commissioner on the Parks and Recreation and Beautification Commission. As a citizen, I live on Atlantic City, directly across from Grover Heights Park. And so on a daily basis, I see the benefit of to our citizens for having these nice parks. I see people everywhere from retirees playing basketball on the courts to young adults playing, retirees playing tennis on the courts, and then young adults playing basketball, and many times a new family, brand new with little toddlers or even newborns, will come and just lay a blanket out on the grass and just relax and take in the fresh air, and it's just a wonderful thing. I see it every day. So it's truly a benefit to our community to have these beautiful parks. As a commissioner on the Parks and Recreation Commission, I've been at it about a year now, and it's been a real rewarding thing for me to do. I've been on many commissions throughout my life and stuff, and I got to say this is one of the best things I've ever done. And I thoroughly enjoy it. I feel I'm giving a little bit to the community, and I get so much in return. It's amazing. And as Kathy Petker, the director of Parks and Recreation, was going through the PowerPoint, and I noticed that there's so many items that came up on that PowerPoint, and they're all really a lot of fun. And we have a very minimal staff in the city for Parks and Recreation. And they do an amazing job of producing all these activities for a real small staff. So the parks or the concerts in the park, I believe now are probably the best in the county. There, like Kathy said, we had about 500 folks there yesterday, and I've been to all of them from all over the county, Paso to Santa Maria even, and nothing compares to these concerts. So, and lastly, I would like to speak to the citizens that the Parks and Recreation Commission has an opening for two vacancies as commissioners. So anybody that's interested in being a commissioner, please apply for it. It'll give you an amazing insight to what goes on in this city. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And it is important to point out that with a very small full-time staff and all of you commissioners assisting who are working on a volunteer basis, so much is getting done, and we really appreciate that. Does anyone have any other comments on that item? All right, then we will move on to our next item, which is a presentation. It's an update on fire station improvements.
Good evening, everybody. So we are here today to recognize the completion of some important facility upgrades that we've made to our fire station with the support of Grover Beach United and Home Depot. Tonight, we're joined by representatives from each of those organizations as we acknowledge them for their contribution on the project. Just as a little background, the fire station improvements are part of a larger capital improvement program to enhance city-owned facilities. In fiscal year 2016-2017, the city completed the following improvements on our own facilities, including new carpeting at City Hall, the fire station, and the police department. We installed new fencing and security gates at the Corporation Yard and Fire Department. And we also installed new landscaping and lighting around this facility, City Hall, namely its parking lots. This brings us to the fire station improvements. Grover Beach United and the City of Grover Beach engaged in a public-private partnership to administer a grant from the Home Depot Foundation. This was known as the Team Depot Grant. Under this grant, $5,000 was granted for the purchase of materials and supplies, with the installation being donated by volunteers from the Home Depot crews. The city also contributed $15,000 for this project. The scope of work for this project included removing the existing carpeting from the first floor and replacing that with an epoxy surface treatment, painting the entire interior of the fire station, replacing the carpeted staircase with a rubberized stair treading, replacing all the window blinds and the ceiling fans, and installation of new baseboards. So the final product leads us to the first floor, where we can see on the left is the common meeting area, dining facility of the first floor, and on the right is the entryway into the fire station. If we look at the staircase, what was once carpeted is now outfitted with a slip-resistant rubberized surfacing. The living accommodations have also been upgraded with ceiling fans, painting, new blinds, carpeting, and baseboards throughout the entire second story. And as stated earlier, we have a new security gate surrounding the rear parking lot of the fire station. Looking forward into fiscal year 2017-2018, the city plans on replacing the existing City Hall and Police Department building signage, installing new parking lot signage around City Hall, improving Ramona Garden Park, and continuing with improvements to the fire station and its landscaping. And that being said, we have some acknowledgments for both Grover Beach United and Home Depot. Chief Lieberman.
Thank you, Mo. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and Council. I'm honored to be here working with Mo to acknowledge the team that really helped us improve the conditions of the fire station. So if I could come forward, I'd love to have you, the council, present these certificates to both Home Depot and Grover United.
Yes, if representatives from Home Depot and Grover Beach United could come up, that would be great.
Thank you. just also like to take this moment to from River Beach United to thank Linda McClure.
Is that better? There you go. To thank Linda McClure for all her services and all the work and dedication that she has put in, you know, her heart and soul into this. But like all good things, you've got to move on and concentrate on you. Take care of you. She's been working her tail off, and she needs to take care of herself. And we will continue, and we'll get things done. But Linda worked very tirelessly on the fire department upgrade with Home Depot, and with that, we'd also like to give you this because I know you like flags. There you go. Okay, and thank you. And this year we have Grover Beach Car Show is coming. And we also have the 805 Rockstock that will be playing together. So we have some fabulous car show and music this year. This is our fourth annual. All right.
And Tom's the new president. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And Linda, before you go too far, we have an additional recognition for you on behalf of Supervisor Hill. If you'd like to come up, Hannah. We have, good words travel fast. So we want to recognize you for all your years that you have given Grover Beach United. We really all appreciate it.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, City Council. Thank you for allowing me to be here this evening. My name is Hannah Miller. I'm here on behalf of Supervisor Hill. Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. We just wanted to, Supervisor Hill wanted the chance to also thank you, Linda. We're just so thankful for how much you love this community and how much you love South County and all of the things that you've done. And it's been a personal pleasure of mine to work with you when you reached out to us. So thank you very much. And this is on behalf of Supervisor Hill.
That's awesome.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate our appreciation as a city. Sometimes it takes a village of partnerships, and this was, you know, public, private, nonprofit, everybody coming to the table for a really worthy cause, and, you know, this is getting the ball rolling, and we're going to keep moving from here. As you can see, we have lots of more projects in the works, so.
Could I
say we really appreciate it. And, of course, if any of my fellow council members would like to comment.
Well, I wanted to thank all of you at Grover Beach United, especially Linda and Tom. But many of you worked tirelessly. 4 years ago, you said you were going to raise money and you were going to give it to the city. And I believed you, but now you've really done it. So thank you so much for all that you've done.
And I'll echo that sentiment as well and say thank you to Home Depot for stepping forward with the grant and for Linda and Grover Beach United for securing that grant and finding the grant and then also the city to be able to put forward staff resources and also the fire department staff as they were out of their elements as the work was being done. So I'll say thank you to all involved as well. And then later in the meeting, I'd like to kind of come back and revisit this briefly just for a potential for future agenda item as well.
And I agree with everything that's been said before.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. All right. We're going to move on to our next item, which is public communications. I do have a few speaker request forms here. It looks like three. And during public communications, any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all the communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot act on items that are not on our agenda. So if I will call up the first slip I have here is Ken Lehman. Okay.
Am I on? Okay. Because last time I was here, I was told to sit down in 3 minutes, and the marijuana initiative people came up, which I'm not against. And they could go over 3 minutes a lot because revenue was going to be occurring from this initiative. I'm just here for the increases that we're getting in the city of Grover Beach, and I would like to work with the city to try to help the people here. We have some elderly people, retired. We only have 5,000. I just did a lot of quick research. I've been out of town for a while. So if I'm wrong with my research and my numbers, please correct me. But we only have 5,100 residents of property owners. And some of these, and I think another 1,000 for business owners. I think I read and researched 6,000. It's not really a complaint. It's just I'm being overwhelmed with taxes. I'm retired on a set income, and thank you, power above, I'm doing okay. But I have a lot of community people here that are not, and it's really hard on them. And I'm just here for more than one. I look at the past, like for example, the roads. My roads were made with my contractor, and I had paid the cost. We all got this for the roads a long time ago, and it said it was an average of $642 a month. I'm not complaining, but on this ad that was sent by the city, it didn't tell us about the 25 years. It goes up to $150 per 100,000. So as the years come, our community is going to pay more and more and more. I was told to sacrifice, try to understand that we have an infrastructure in Grover Beach, and I understand that. We're small. But at the same time, people are hurting. We need to help people. Compassionately help others. So the cost is getting so high, and I've made suggestions. For example, once I made a suggestion down here where the tourists come in, and the businesses make money, and they can pass on their taxes to the businesses. The hamburgers can go up. The food can go up. Everything can go up, and I still have to pay for that. I'm not a tourist, but I live here. So I upped the taxes on that. But I mentioned to you one time that the city was, there was water being taken out of our, and by the way, the drought's not over. I mean, we say it's over, we should worry a little bit. So I see the campers come up and take water, and I made a suggestion. I don't know how much they still pay, $10 to go out there still, $10 to camp. They come back, dump their waste, take water out of our table. I see Pismo's growing, Lopez Lake is going to go. We got growth going. But anyway, these 5,000 people here in this town, we're paying a lot of taxes to take care of a lot of other people coming in town, tourists. Why can't we find a way to somehow take some of that revenue from that water? I don't know, work with the state or what. I don't know what kind of arrangements you have, because you are more knowledgeable than I am, to make them pay a little bit more money for that water. Have something to monitor that water down there. Put some money into the pot for the citizens to also use that money to bring down our taxes and help us kind of have a way to live. It was like Cuesta College, another one. I've got so many things. I get all these when it's time to vote and time to do bonds. We got bonds, which is okay. I understand schools. We need bonds. But at the same time, it's overloading us. Can't we find a way to get the tourists to pay some of this money? I know we are here, but they use our roads. They use our infrastructure. They use our water. Why can't we find a way to take some burden off the taxpayers?
Thank you for those comments.
Okay, thank you. I had more to say, but can I say something real quick?
Quickly.
At the same time, salaries just keep going up in this city. I just don't want this to become another Hawaiian Gardens. Thank you.
And next up, we have Eamon Lacey.
Good evening, Mayor, City Councils, City Staff, and City Attorney. My name is Eamon Lacey. I'm a resident of the Five Cities. I work with Trident Management Solutions and Medicinal Greens, Inc. I look forward to working here in the city of Grover Beach. Todd Mitchell, resident of Grover Beach, is out of town this evening, so I offered to share this from us. We are extremely fortunate that Grover Beach's City Council, City Staff, and the majority of the residents are in support of the cannabis businesses operating within the city. We know that every department is affected with the addition of the new legal industry. Everyone has been great to work with, including Planner Janet Reese, Community Development Director Bruce Buckingham, and Chief Lieberman, and others. We are one of 12 dispensary pre-applicants and have provided our deposit for use of cannabis permits for the dispensary and other vertically integrated cannabis businesses. We've put together an experienced team of locals, one of them being Kenneth Todd Folstrom, who's the owner-operator of the nearest compliant dispensary in the South, Organic Greens in Goleta. Richard Gaither, who's possibly the most experienced individual in California using closed-loop ethanol extraction. Todd Mitchell, from all who you all know. And myself, Eamon Lacey, graduate of Cal Poly, and will focus primarily on inventory tracking, dispatch, and security. We wrote our application reflective of not only Grover Beach's ordinance and regulations, but also of the County of San Luis Obispo and the state laws, including Governor's Trailer Bill, also known as Prop 94. We drafted our pre-application to address the city as well as HDL's major points. It was a difficult decision, and we chose not to dive directly into the weeds. We have additional documents, including employee handbook, in-depth SOPs, and comprehensive budgets. We are also able to provide specific operations, safety protocols, and PowerPoint presentations regarding full vertical integration, seed to sale, cultivation, distribution, delivery, retail, and dispensary. We are working on a phased approach where we can operate manufacturing, dispatch, and delivery as soon as possible. We all make ourselves fully available to assist in the city in any way, and thank you very much for your dedication to the city and the residents. Thank you.
Thank you. And next up, we have Kathy Flores.
Good evening. Thank you. Let me put my glasses on here. Thank you for allowing me to address the City Council this evening about the ongoing problems of fireworks year after year in Grover Beach. The City of Grover Beach's current ordinance specifies that fireworks can be set off until midnight, July 3rd through 5th. Most towns only allow fireworks on the 4th of July until 11 p.m., if at all. There is currently a $1,000 fine for illegal firework use. My question is, how many citations have been written to date? Some complain there is an enforcement problem, especially with illegal fireworks. I believe in order to enforce the ordinance, a reward problem, a program could be set up where the community can anonymously call into a 1-800 number or Grover Beach Police Department dispatch to report the illegal use of fireworks they have witnessed or are about to be set off. When the perpetrator is caught, the $1,000 fine imposed would pay for the reward plus patrol time spent away from regular policing of our neighborhoods. This reward program could include setting off legal fireworks after 4th of July. We need to care more about our vets and their struggles with PTSD, our elderly, and our pet population, and less about our fundraiser recipients. The welfare of our citizens enduring the nightly firecrackers that disturb the peace all summer long should take priority. Does Grover Beach have a noise ordinance? Don't firecrackers fall into this category? They are much louder than anyone's party music. I believe that firework stands should not be allowed to be open after 4th of July. I noticed two on Grand Avenue still open on July 7th, 2 days beyond the existing ordinance. Why have an ordinance if not enforced? Firework stand permits should not be given out the next year to those who abuse the ordinance. Please, please revise your ordinance to make it illegal to use legal fireworks after July 4th and actively enforce currently illegal use of firework ordinance, bottle rockets, fireworks, cherry bombs, etc., that have possible cause for wildfires, damage to our homes, autos, and our sanity. They are still going off as late as 1 a.m. last night. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Judith Bean.
Good evening, council members. Judith Bean, Chamber of Commerce. When Matt showed up on the scene, a little over a year ago, I think now, we've been talking about an idea, and I've talked to our council rep, Barbara Nichols, about it, too, and so I wanted to share it with you and hoping you're on board. We're looking to do a business cleanup day here in Grover Beach. And I've talked to the garbage company. Twice a year, they do an extra garbage pickup. And the next one will be the week of September 18th. So we are hoping on September 16th to get you all involved. Our Grover Beach Rotary has agreed to participate, and other service groups that have yet to be identified. But what we would like you to do is to choose your favorite park or your favorite neighborhood or your favorite street and lead a team and clean up trash for an hour on September 16th in the morning. And anyone in the community that wanted to join their favorite council member to clean up trash, we would partner you with some of our Grover Beach Rotarians, and then we would try and fill a trash bag for each one of us. Through Grover Beach Rotary, we do it once a month, and we usually have about 10 people and fill up 10 trash bags. We figure with your help, we can do a lot of cleanup for the city of Grover Beach. And then the trash company will come by the week after as part of their regular duties, and you can put up to 10 bags out in front of your residence. This doesn't normally affect apartments or businesses. So what the Chamber of Commerce Board has decided that if businesses have extra large trash items that they'd like to put up, we're going to cover the cost of that for them so that we can get our business community involved as well and hope that they'll help clean up the neighbors. So we're hoping in September that you'll join us, and we'll be contacting each one of you individually to adopt a neighborhood or a park. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And next up we have John A. Wysong.
I'm John A. Wysong, Grover Beach. I've been over 60 years, and I'm cruising up there in those 80s, but I'm not senile. Thank God we got a pleasant face tonight. And I hope to God you understand my language. Because the people walk down my street, I say good morning, good afternoon. I don't know what the hell they're saying. Anyway, for years, they've had problems down here at the sewer plant. For years, we've had problems here with water. 2 years now, avocados died. 2 years, I went without water on Thanksgiving. For the last 2 years, my avocados died, so I'm thinking about getting a tree surgeon because I don't have a lot of time because I got cattle out there in Guadalupe. It's difficult to get around at my age and do all the things I do. Yet, I got run over by a pickup 12 years ago and I'm here. But it's like the doctors tell me. Hell's full. I can't get in yet. But down here, I have sat in a meeting where three people sat up there, Hill, Schultz, and I don't know what the lady. And they just sit there. Let's do something. I said years ago, let's get some grant money. I've gone across country 24 times since 1960, but I've gone across four times since 2009. And the Mississippi River and Ohio River, there's 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000 people. They get grants, they get money, they get the reverse osmosis. Why don't we do that? Napoma is shy of water. We just went through 5 years of drought. I know. I had to buy hay. And I don't understand why you people, the knowledge you have. I went to a one-room school. But I'm not dumb yet. If that thing could be reversed osmosis, you could get grants, and you could do something about it. There's millions of gallons going into that ocean. Why don't you just throw your paycheck in there? Why not? Here, Debbie and Schultz has been on here for years. Nothing done. I'd like to see maybe you go down there and do something. Number two, that's a question, actually. Number two, Oak Park. I heard several months ago there was a survey on the street after it was finished. You know, I told you about the crosswalks, and I told you about the guy that works here told me to go up to the Saratoga and walk back to Brighton. You know, what a stupid illiterate employee to tell me something.
John.
I'd like to see, and I said to you guys, get a cane, go up there and try it. But you didn't do it. So, I want to know what the survey said. And I want to know, because I said six, seven, 8 months ago, that the church up there wanted a bus stop. And they wanted a crosswalk so the people could get across. On Brighton and Oak Park, there's a tree. The limbs are down like this. Can't see. You know, I use that 7 days a week, two or three times a day. Why in the hell can't we fix it? Why can't we trim the tree? Why can't we slow the traffic? Why can't you get a light out there, a signal, so people can get across at the church? Why can't you put a bus stop there? Right. The signals up there aren't working. That tells you how fast you're going.
All right, thank you for those comments.
But I do want you to see about that, South County. There's corruption in there, and there's a crook there. I must say more.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, I have no more speaker request forms. Oh, two more. Okay. Could I have Brad Snook?
Thank you. Snook that in at the last minute. My name is Brad Snook. I'm the chair of our county chapter of Surfrider Foundation. Just to piggyback on a couple issues brought up during public comment, it's important for the cities and the county to instill public trust and you know, the capabilities of the city and also their ability to carry things out. Our chapter has been active in South County Sanitation District, especially when the Wallace Group was involved with the district there, Sanitation District. Asking for an evaluation of management. And the recent indictment by the DA of Mr. Wallace is kind of a It was kind of not the culmination, but perhaps the start of a new beginning for the sanitation district. But what ended up happening after new engineers got in there and saw and made comments during the sanitation district meetings that the plant was out of compliance, that there were changes that needed to be made, the chlorine contact chamber needed to be fixed, the water needed to be recycled through the plant to keep the flows going 24/7 so that the plant could function as it was, as it was intended to do. But until the recycling took place with the water leaving the plant prematurely, but instead getting rerouted to the top so that you could keep a constant circulation and the bugs could work to design, the plant was out of compliance. And that is in the public record. Now, as far as the DA goes, these cities in the South County Sanitation District need to assess whether, when the criminal findings are resolved, whether there's a civil issue that needs to be addressed. The public's trust needs to be reinstilled that after all those years of potential criminal neglect, depending on what the DA finds, whether these cities have something that's going to be left on the table and you're just going to walk away, or this is money that we can use in the public's interest to get some of these important projects done, like water reclamation, like other issues as far as infrastructure goes, as far as water storage, as far as not wasting so much water. So much to be done, water conservation, water reclamation. We have an old sewage plant that was put in line in 1966. We need to reevaluate the location of that plant, move it out of a floodplain, move it out of a tsunami zone. It's going to take money to do that. We don't want to leave money on the table. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, I think that was the last forum I had. Oh, These are other stuff. So now, moving on, we will move on to our consent agenda. I do have one speaker request form on item number 7, and I'm wondering, could I allow that person to speak, or do we need to formally pull that item?
Mayor Pro Tem, you can go ahead and allow the public to speak to issues that are on the consent item, and then it's up to your consensus of the council as to whether you want to pull it or just go ahead and approve the consent as is.
Okay. Then I would like to call up that speaker, Daryl Scheck, to speak on agenda item seven, please.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Shaw and City Council. My name is Daryl Scheck from SEIU Local 620 in Santa Maria, which represents many of your great employees here at the city. And I want to thank City Council for their thoughtful deliberations regarding the compensation levels for 3 new positions proposed to be represented by our union. And we think it's important to give credit where credit is due. I appreciate Council's deliberations and City staff's additional analytical work on this subject. We believe the city's revised proposed compensation levels are much more in line with market and other comparable positions in the area, and want to extend our deepest gratitude for listening and acting on our concerns. And thank you for your additional due diligence on this subject, and we look forward to working with the city on future items of mutual interest, and we appreciate your service. Thank you very much tonight.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any items under the consent agenda that anyone on the council would like to pull for further discussion?
I was interested in asking just a couple of questions on the HR topic.
Okay, that's item number 6. How about you go ahead and ask your questions, and we'll see if the city attorney's face starts looking like we have to pull it.
Well, I had a number of questions on some of the warrants, and they were all explained, so that's good news. I have a concern about the method that we use, that everybody uses, well, not everybody, that most public agencies use, whereby they determine what salaries should be by looking at what comparable cities did. And comparables are, of course, a really good way to do it, but when you're only looking at comparable cities, it ratchets it up and up and up. And I think originally government employees were not paid well, and so that process helped bring them in line with the rest of the community. But at this stage, I question whether or not government salaries are, in fact, commensurate with similar salaries out in the public. And so I would just like us to consider perhaps also comparing salaries with the public marketplace, and just to make it more equitable. And that way, if similar jobs are paying more out there, then we can adjust for that. And if they're paying less, then we can adjust for that.
Okay. Well, that sounds like we would need to pull the item and discuss. Okay. So why don't we pull item 6 for now and put it at the end of the agenda, which is normally what we would do. And then if no one wants to discuss any of the other items in the consent agenda, I would take a motion on those.
I move that we accept the consent agenda as presented, with the exception of item 6.
I'll second that.
Okay, and with this, why don't we do a roll call vote on this?
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
Mayor Scholes is absent, and Mayor Shaw?
Yes. Okay, we have no public hearing items tonight, so why don't we move on to regular business? Item 9, the second reading and adoption of Ordinance 1707. And City Manager, take
Thank
it away.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. What's before you tonight with this item is a second reading by title only and adoption of an ordinance regarding amending the city's contract with CalPERS for an increased cost-sharing arrangement with our classic sworn personnel. This is a 3% cost-sharing arrangement that was negotiated as part of our current memorandum of understanding. The City Council conducted the first reading of this item back on June the 5th, and as required by CalPERS, we must conduct a second reading and adoption in order to effectuate this ordinance. So this is before the council tonight, and I'd be glad to take any questions and comments.
Okay, does anyone have questions? Barbara?
No.
Okay. Debbie, do you have questions?
No, not
Jeff?
On this one.
Yeah, I didn't have any questions myself, as I know this, you know, we needed to agendize this in this manner for legal reasons. So if no one has questions, I'll open it up. Does any member of the public want to speak on this item? Okay. I'll close public comment then. That being said, I will take a motion on this item.
I'll go ahead and make a recommendation that we adopt ordinance number 17-07, conduct the second reading by title only, and to amend the city's contract with CalPERS to include a 3% increase cost sharing for all classic sworn personnel.
I'll second. I think Barbara got there first.
Okay, and should we take, let's take a roll call on this too.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
Mayor Scholes is absent. Mayor Shaw?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item 10, expanded polystyrene food container and product regulations. And it looks like we will also, again, be having, allowing our city manager here, Matt Bronson, to kick it off. So.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Again, members of the council. What's before you in this item is an informational report regarding expanded polystyrene regulations and a request for council direction in considering whether to proceed in developing an ordinance here in Grover Beach. So just a little bit of background first. In October of 2015, the City Council directed staff to explore options for considering EPS, as it's called, expanded polystyrene regulations. At the same time, there were several other communities locally that were enacting such regulations, and I'll touch on those more in just a moment. So as part of that direction, council further directed us to come back in the following fiscal year of 16-17, given workload constraints and other priorities that staff was engaged in back in October 2015. That was fiscal year 15-16. So fast forward into this past year that we just closed back in January. As you may recall, there were a number of public speakers who came to the council and inquired about this action and the direction and the regulations. We were still working through a number of other key priorities and workload items, but the council did provide further direction to get this on the agenda. Last several months, as you're aware, has been taken up by a number of key policy issues, cannabis, most notably, but also our budget process. So this was the first agenda that we really had the flexibility and time to be able to schedule this item before the council. So this is, again, an informational item for tonight, but we are seeking your direction on how to proceed. Just a little bit of background information, and before I go on, let me also just acknowledge that our report tonight was put together largely through the help of our management intern, Aaliyah Burgum, who is here in the audience. And you may recall Aaliyah from her work with us on the council goal-setting process. She was assisting us running the computer and assisting us in that process. Aaliyah has been a great asset to us and has helped us in gathering material and information. I wanted to recognize her for her work here tonight. So just an overview on EPS. EPS products often use foam material commonly referred to back in the past as styrofoam to hold food, drinks, beverages. The picture on screen, the top picture, shows some of the EPS products that are commonly used. The clamshell container on the far right, a drink or coffee cup on the far left. The expanded foam material is really what sets these products apart. EPS is currently not recycled in San Luis Obispo County, so it is a product that goes into our waste stream. The challenge is that the product does break down over time. So small particles from the foam material do break down and can get into storm drains, they can get into our ocean and marine habitat and other places. A common alternative to the EPS products is what's called clear, rigid, or oriented polystyrene, which you see on the bottom picture. It's a, it can be a hard plastic, clear plastic, polystyrene material. This is recyclable. You can recycle this even after food contact, so that's a key difference in this product. Common justifications for regulating EPS products include the impact on the environment, particularly in storm drains and in our beach and marine environment, the potential for health impacts. There have been some studies that have linked the products that could leach from EPS products into the users who are using them, and also the opportunities to further hit our recycling goals, since again, EPS products are not inherently recyclable. So in terms of the key reasons for considering this and why communities have considered this is the foam structure is not biodegradable in its own right. It is a product that does go to the landfill and is part of our waste stream. Some studies have estimated that EPS products can comprise up to 15% of our storm drain litter as it stands now. That was a study done by Caltrans a few years ago. And also, some studies have suggested that one of the most common forms of debris on our beaches across the state is comprised of EPS products. I will note that our climate action plan here in Grover Beach does call for increasing recycling and increasing our waste diversion stream to up to 75%. So again, this, in terms of EPS products, creates a bit of a challenge because EPS, again, is not a recyclable product when our climate action plan is calling us for even greater recycling. There are a number of concerns that are raised regarding EPS restrictions, and the Chamber of Commerce can speak more to those concerns. These are coming from many in the business community regarding the added cost and the, quote, performance, meaning the viability of alternative products, and the added cost of more regulations in general. There are a number of costs, particularly for small businesses, and these are costs that often are passed on to customers directly. So those are factors to consider in looking at these regulations and any regulations on our business community. Currently, in California, over 80 cities and counties have enacted EPS regulations. There was a list in your staff report that showed the cities and counties that we're aware of thus far. Some agencies also prohibit the retail sale of EPS products in addition to restricting the use of food and drink containers within restaurants and eating establishments. There are 4 cities locally that have enacted such regulations: Arroyo Grande in 2016, Morro Bay also in 2016, Pismo Beach 2015, and San Luis Obispo in 2015. In addition to our discussion tonight, this is an active discussion topic in Paso Robles. In fact, tomorrow night, their city council will be having a very similar discussion and similar item as our council is tonight. For the local ordinances, there are a lot of similarities. There was a model ordinance that came out of San Luis Obispo first, and that was the template that agencies used to enact ordinances after that. So many of the ordinances do have similar provisions. They do prohibit the use of EPS products, as shown on screen, and require use of biodegradable, compostable, or recycled food containers. They do prohibit vendors and event promoters from selling or providing EPS products at their events. So it's above and beyond restaurants, but also getting into retail establishments, such as a grocery store or a drugstore. There are exceptions that are built into these ordinances. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There are exemptions that include food that is prepared outside of the city. So if it comes in from a different city or a different state, that is usually exempted from the ordinance. There are exemptions for raw food and meats. Also, there, in the case of Arroyo Grande, an undue hardship exemption. A business can apply and say that they have a unique circumstance that would create undue hardship in fulfilling and meeting the ordinance. In all these cases, the first violation, the first fee, can be paid for in making the switch to alternative products. So there is a certain grace period that is built into the process. And I would say that enforcement is done on a complaint-based system versus a proactive type of arrangement. Cities are not necessarily going around looking for this in restaurants. We would respond when complaints are brought to us and respond similar to other code enforcement cases and deal with the businesses and send materials and send information to seek compliance with the ordinance. And in each ordinance, there is a grace period built in for businesses to use their existing supply before making the switch. In the case of San Luis and Rio Grande, they have up to a one-year grace period. The ordinance went into effect 6 months after it was approved by the council, and then there was a six-month period of soft warnings before they went to a fee-based or fine-based system. The intent is to seek compliance over time. It's not to seek direct enforcement that's punitive. It's to really shift the use of towards the alternative products over time. In terms of business outreach, I wanted to thank Ms. Bean from the Chamber, and we've worked and talked about this ordinance off and on for the last several months, and there's more work that we wish to do going forward, but it has been an effort where we have wanted to work together to make sure the business community is aware and to bring their interests and concerns to the table here tonight. So we have talked to the Chamber regarding the ordinance. We asked for their assistance with doing some business outreach, given our own limited staffing and business development, economic development. We drafted a survey similar to a survey that was used in other communities and had the Chamber help us with that survey. There was a relatively low response rate, so the Chamber did a great job in going out and doing additional outreach above and beyond that survey and got some very good viewpoints and perspectives to bring to this discussion tonight. The Chamber has expressed concerns about this ordinance at this time, given the impacts on small businesses from increased costs. And again, that is one of the common factors and concerns raised in this process, and the Chamber has submitted that, and Judith, I'm sure, can speak more to that in her comments. And the Chamber indicated that their approach was really to more look at this over a longer time period or make it a voluntary transition. I believe that many businesses are shifting to these products already, and so having a longer time period or making it more voluntary could be a way to help meet the interests and needs of the business community. So again, what we are asking for tonight is your direction on whether to proceed in developing an actual EPS ordinance, and if so, what are some of the key parameters that you'd like to see in such an ordinance? You have the parameters that other communities around us have been using, so maybe some of those are such parameters if you choose such to develop an ordinance. Again, we look at other ordinances as models. We believe that we could draft such an ordinance in the next few months, given the work that's been done already by other communities, and bring that to the council this fall, again, pending your direction. And as part of this, we would work with the Chamber and other businesses to do further outreach, to make sure that there is more awareness of what we're doing, to make sure we're getting even more input into this process, and bring that to the council in tandem with bringing an ordinance for your discussion and potential action. So with that, I'd be glad to take your questions and comments.
Thank you so much for that report. Barbara, do you have questions?
I think it's probably in the best interest of the city to pursue this. I would like to see some outreach for this consideration of the small businesses that we have in town. A lot of mom and pop kind of things that it might be a financial hardship for. So we need to have some surveys, some outreach to our cities and get a reaction on how quickly we can do this. And if we have a preference for the clear plastic or the cardboard or something to replace the EPS.
Councilmember Peterson, do you have questions?
I do, and they may be questions that could be answered by folks when they come up to speak, but I'll just throw them out there now. I'm wondering why the lining of raw meat trays is exempted. I'm curious about that. And I'm looking forward to hearing from the Chamber. I think that's all for right now.
Okay. All right. And Councilmember Lee, do you have questions?
No questions, but I'm sure it'll be a fun discussion.
Okay. And I had a couple questions that possibly can be answered by either the city manager or possibly when she speaks on behalf of the chamber. I wondered about what we're recommending as a new container. Are we then recommending people switch to the clear plastic? Because I've also seen cardboard. And then, because it seemed like we were recommending the clear plastic, the ones we saw in the picture. And going along with that, I just had hoped to see in here a chart with prices and, you know, what's really the bottom line of how much more is this going to be costing people. I would need to know that, and I don't know if anyone knows that right now. Let's see. Yeah, and then I guess my other questions would, I just want to hear more from Ms. Bean, so maybe if you could come on up and enlighten us as to why the chamber's taken this position or just share some info with us, that'd be great.
Sure. We spoke to 19 small businesses in the city that utilize to-go containers. And the good news is that several of those businesses said they no longer use polystyrene. Others said that they plan to switch over when they could. Of those who are still using polystyrene, the bulk of them said that it would raise their prices more than double. Some of them it's triple, some of them it's quadrupling their costs. And they'd have to pass that cost along to diners or eat that cost themselves. And we specifically look to speak to small businesses, mom and pops, and we didn't talk to, like, Vaughn's, but we talked to the small mom and pops that are here. Most of them felt it would be very difficult for them to do either of those alternatives. For example, one of our local businesses told us the cost of a coffee cup would go from the 8 cents he pays now to 32 cents. And interestingly enough, often those paper cups that hold your to-go coffee is plastic-coated, so it's not recyclable, and it doesn't break down in landfills. Even a ceramic cup, it takes much more energy to produce than a polystyrene one, and it typically continues to use energy to heat the water needing to wash it. So, the best thing you could do is bring your own cup to a restaurant. So this is one of those issues where choice is not as clear as it sometimes appears. It is recyclable. We just don't recycle it here. They recycle it in Los Angeles. We just don't have the ability to recycle it here. Two businesses that we talked with said that they were having trouble finding a product that meets their needs. Basically, they're restaurants that serve food that's wet and messy and found that the paper leaked. There's a bamboo alternative, but the recyclable products don't come with the divider. So if you have your enchiladas next to your rice and beans, it all gets mushed together and then your customer's unhappy. So it doesn't work for a couple of those really small businesses. So, yeah, the Chamber Board would like to see you hold off on instituting a ban on polystyrene right now, basically because we'd like to see you continue making progress on streets and get the Lodge Project online, and we'd like to see fewer open storefronts before we make this mandatory. So we think that you're in an ideal position as our city leaders to first educate the public, including businesses, about recycling, because the fastest way to get a business to change how they do business is to educate their customer. So if you do proceed with it, we're hoping you'll give it a long lead time, like Matt had talked about, in order for businesses to use up their current stock and offer a waiver for those micro businesses that find it really hard to comply.
Okay. Does anyone have any specific questions for Ms. Bean?
I do. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go.
So, thank you, and I'll ask the same question for anybody who's going to be speaking in support of this as well. So, are you aware of any ordinances, either locally or in other areas, where there's a income cap for the business, or that says if you make below this income, you're exempt? So, I see in some of the comparison charts there's other exemptions, but is there a exemption in other ordinances that you're aware of for financial purposes?
I'm not aware. Maybe your intern is, but I'm not aware of one. Yeah.
Oh, great. Thanks. That's what I have for me.
Okay.
Well, I was curious about parts of some of the ordinances. One of them was that any event promoter violating the code that would result in a fine varying rates imposed depending on the size of the event. So I'm wondering if you have any idea of, does that mean that if somebody at the Stone Soup Festival comes in as a vendor and they're using polystyrene products, that means the chamber and the city get fined? Or does it mean the individuals do?
Not as far as Stone Soup's concerned, because we outlawed polystyrene a couple of years ago with our vendors, because they're coming from out of the area. But I can tell you that as I clean up the streets once a month for Rotary, and we don't see polystyrene on the streets. So, I'm sure it's there on the beach, and you have your data to see, but I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing lots of interesting trash. Polystyrene is not one of them.
I had a couple of other questions, too. Now, I may be misinterpreting, but it sounded like you were supportive of them doing it in Arroyo Grande.
No, we were not supportive. We didn't. Okay. We were neutral on it
neutral.
At that time. We did run a survey. But our board is heavily focused in Grover Beach, so, and a lot of small business members in Grover Beach. So we had the time, and Matt and I talked about it quite a bit. And so the board's direction was, we need to really get out there and talk to every business that we can. So that's what we did.
And then EPS not being recycled in Slo County, I'm just curious if anybody knows why not.
It's expensive, recycling. That's why you've seen the recycling centers go away, because it doesn't pencil for them as you can't make money from recycling. It's difficult. And it takes a lot of resources, and it's expensive. Yeah. So, and part of the problem with recycling is that people, you put things in your recycling bin and you think, oh, this is cool, I'm recycling. But unless you're preparing it correctly, it's still going to end up in the landfill. If you don't rinse it out your containers, they go straight into the landfill. They don't get recycled. So part of it is an education of what can be recycled. Because, we wouldn't necessarily know if somebody didn't tell us.
Thank you.
I had just one more question, because you do represent Arroyo Grande, and they've been through this process. Have business owners come back to the chamber, with stories of hardship, or how do you have any insight as to how it's playing out in Arroyo Grande?
Only anecdotal. I would be lying if I told you I had a lot of data to back that up.
Okay. All right. If there aren't any more questions for now, I think we'll open it up to the rest of the public. I do have some speaker request forms here, so if we could start with Dr. Kathleen Curtis, please.
Mayor Pro Temp and council members, I'm glad to be here to support moving forward with this ordinance. We are in a time period right now where this is becoming quite common to enact these ordinances across California and actually across the country. Large cities like New York and San Francisco have recently enacted EPS ordinances. The issue, with many of these kinds of things where there's no real clear incentive to do the right thing, when it costs more, is that you cannot really move forward in a voluntary fashion with much success. Changing culture takes a long time, and in many cases, culture change is initiated by action that may be policy, may be ordinances, may be regulations, but culture changes oftentimes as a reaction to something that is mandated. And with these kinds of ordinances, of course, it's difficult, and change is always hard. You had asked a question about the relative cost, and in most of the containers, just kind of comparing, apples to apples, a 6x6x3 inch container out of EPS, a hinged clamshell type of container, has a cost of about 4.5 cents per item. the durable packaging, which is the hinged styrofoam, not the styrofoam, but the polystyrene, rigid polystyrene that you're talking about, is about 8 cents. And the EcoChoice biodegradable compostable sugar cane variety, which is one of the products that's out there, is in the neighborhood of 8 cents as well. The coated papers can be a little bit more than that. And depending on what features come with the cardboard containers, something in the neighborhood of 11 cents. So the costs are more, that's for sure, but the gain is that much better as well. We've seen the effect of policy on various environmental and public health issues over time. You think back to leaded gasoline, emission controls, tobacco use, and probably most recently, plastic grocery bags, which has now become a statewide ban. And the things that we value in terms of the no more plastic in our ocean, no more mess on the beach with these containers, these are the kinds of things that, it is a value judgment of whether it's important enough for us to move forward with this action at this time or to wait for others to decide that it's time to move forward. But I would just like to speak in favor of moving forward. There are sufficient exemptions, a grace period, hardship exemptions that can be enacted along with this, plus educational campaigns that can help people to understand and to be ready to do this when it becomes in effect.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for your comments. You. And next up, if we could have Cynthia Riplogle. I have no excuse. You wrote out how to say it. I used to have a hard name before I got married, so I got it.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Riplogle. I live in Pismo Beach, and I am the vice chair of Surf Rider Foundation's San Luis Obispo County chapter. I'm also involved with one of our programs at the Surf Rider Foundation that exists nationwide and also here in San Luis Obispo County, which is called Ocean Friendly Restaurants. And with this program, we work with restaurants to voluntarily reduce the amount of disposable plastic waste that they produce. They have to meet a number of criteria in order for us to certify them as ocean friendly, but a main one is that they can use no styrofoam. Now, this is important because styrofoam is one of the items that we find quite a bit at our beach cleanups. It breaks down into tiny pieces, which makes it not only hard to pick up before it washes into the ocean, but also make it very similar to food that fish and birds eat. So those animals ingest these plastic particles, and they can be injured, become malnourished because they're not getting actual food, or even in some cases get so full of plastic that they end up dying. And that's why a polystyrene ban is so important for coastal communities like Grover Beach, because takeout containers that get used in the city do often end up on the sand when they're discarded improperly or into trash cans that are left open and birds pull them out and they wash down the drains and towards the ocean. And these things are hazardous to the health of our wildlife as well as unsightly on our beaches. I am pleased that we do have one restaurant here in Grover Beach, Spoon Trade, which is a certified ocean-friendly restaurant, as well as 9 other restaurants in the county. Well, the programs just started in the county less than a year ago, but we're gaining momentum. Still, as Kathleen mentioned, it's important for a lot of businesses who might not want to do the right thing on their own to have an incentive like a polystyrene ban. And many communities, 80 communities in the state, and many communities across the country and have banned polystyrene, as well as the entire country of France has banned the use of disposable plastic plates and cups. So it's definitely feasible. It's something that can be done. And I urge you to support moving forward with a polystyrene takeout container ban. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and if we can have Brad Snook.
Thank you, Council. Brad Snook, Chair of our County's Chapter Surfrider Foundation. One of our old Rise Above Plastics beach cleanup coordinators used to say, I'm not cleaning the beach, I'm pre-cleaning the ocean. Makes a lot of sense, because when you're out there doing that, when you're out there picking up after other people that don't do the right thing, it kind of leaves a little sour taste, a little bit of resentment about your fellow people, whether they're tourists, whether they are people that have gone to our local businesses and chosen them. Okay, now, a lot of these people that are coming to visit us are coming from other cities or counties that have styrofoam bans. And when they walk into a restaurant in Grover Beach and see all this styrofoam stacked up throughout the restaurant, they're going to be like, what kind of town is this, really? Because when they understand that there are, you know, viable alternatives to having that stuff around, or having it around on the beach, or seeing birds scatter it around the beach, then they're going to say, you know, I want to go to a town that understands that they can do the right thing, because there are viable solutions to that. I appreciate Councilmember Nichols' comments about that. I don't know if she's the representative on the IWMA, but the IWMA doesn't want the styrofoam around because it takes up space. They can't recycle it because when the stuff gets dirty, you can't compress it and haul it away. You can't clean the stuff off. I don't know if you ever tried to do that with a styrofoam container. But you can't scrub the stains out of it. And what they want to reuse it is perfectly clean styrofoam that they can then compress, because it's not going to be expanded anymore. It's expanded when you use it. They need to compress it so they can haul it. It takes up too much space unless it's compressed. They need machinery to do that. And the stuff needs to be clean. So it's not really recyclable. You need to put a lot of energy into compressing that stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the last speaker request form, but yes, if someone else would like to be heard, please come on up. If you could just say your name for us.
Yes. I'm Judith Bernstein. I came before you the very first time we considered this and told you that I felt like I lived in Grover Beach because I'm about 10 yards from it in Arroyo Grande, so what happens in Grover really affects me. I'm also a member of Slow Foam Free. I don't know if everybody here has already seen the brochure. It very carefully documents some of the effects of styrofoam on the oceans and on our beaches and on our wildlife. I also am a freelance writer about food and wine, and I write for a column for Edible Slow, usually about wine and agricultural practices. And I had the fortunate assignment to write an article called Farewell to Foam. And it goes back to the days when polystyrene, known as styrofoam, was touted by environmentalists because it would save cutting down trees. However, years went by, and then some of the adverse effects were discovered, and then the environmentalists, like myself, thought, no, there has to still be another alternative. So I wrote about the other cities that have the ban, and I interviewed people in San Luis Obispo about the effect that it had on business and how business had made the transition, whether they had come together to buy collectively, which would lower the costs. But I interviewed three restaurant owners, one of whom may be of interest to you because he is the owner of Ribline, which I'm sure you all know is three locations. Brian Appiano, he was very cooperative. I interviewed Splash Cafe, which had not had styrofoam for a very long time. I interviewed a restaurant in Pismo Beach, Crack Crab, who was in transition and knew that the ban was coming, and he was happy to phase it out. He said, why not keep our patrons' goodwill and at the same time do something to help the environment? However, Brian did not have alternative products lined up yet, and so far he was having trouble finding affordable ones. But what he said was, they go through 2,500 styrofoam 6-ounce cups and 1,800 clamshells a week. He had found local alternatives, but they cost more, and he was still going to look for less expensive products. In spite of the financial hardship the ban imposes, he's all for it. He says, I'm pro-future and for making the environment better. So I hope you'll work with your local businesses. I hope you have staff who can talk to Moore Bay and Arroyo Grande and, of course, San Luis Obispo to find out and get help in finding affordable suppliers to help the businesses transition. Because by now, we have had a year of experience, at least, under our belts. So I really urge you to see this as something that will, in the long run, help business, not hinder it. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else from the public like to be heard? Come on up. If you could just say your name in the microphone.
Hello, my name is Savannah Cooper, and I'm a Grover Beach resident, and I just want to let you know that I am in support of the ordinance, and I would also like to suggest if maybe you guys can add straws to it. That's all. Thank you so much.
All right. Oh, and if someone could bring Ms. Sharon Brown a microphone. Are you going to come up, Sharon? He was running right behind you, actually.
Oh, there he is.
But now I'm here, so whether I can get back or not, who knows. I didn't intend to speak tonight, but two things. Just logic tells me that, one, we have a problem, and it's not going to go away. In fact, it will probably get worse. And two, the cost of conversion is not going to go down by postponing. It'll go up, like everything else. So I think the time to start on this whole thing is now. And give the businesses a chance. I agree with that wholeheartedly, but I do think it needs to be mandatory.
Thank you. Okay, well then I will bring it back to the council. What we are trying to do tonight is receive the report and provide direction to staff on a potential ordinance. So maybe we should all talk about, if each of us could talk about, you know, first whether you want the ordinance or not, and then if you do, maybe some direction. So do you want to start, Barbara, because we kind of know how you feel.
Okay. Yes, I think we should proceed, and as we do with most everything, do our due diligence beforehand as far as giving notice to the businesses and locating supplies that are reasonably priced, helping them locate that. And just get it started, get it going, and let the ball roll and build up.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Peterson, do you want to weigh in next?
Yes, I'm in favor of it, and I'm also in favor of giving some lead time to our local businesses so that they can use up existing stock. And I think that the point is that we've known about this since 1988. Berkeley instituted it in 1988. So this isn't new. We've known. And I almost feel as a responsible city that we have an obligation. Well, I feel I personally have an obligation to make positive choices for people's health. Mm-hmm. So I'm in favor of it while also considering our businesses. We have a lot of ways that we can inexpensively promote it. We've got Facebook, we've got the Next Door, we've got the Charter Channel 20. So I think that there will be ways for people to find out about it. And it also meets our CAP requirements and climate action plan requirements, which is a good thing. So all in all, I'm definitely in favor of it.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Lee?
Cool. And I'll echo those comments as well. I'd like to put a little bit of meat to the direction, if not raw meat on a polystyrene clamshell. But I'd like to see us kind of fashion the initial ordinance discussion off of Arroyo Grande. So as looking at Arroyo Grande and Pismo, the two adjacent jurisdictions, Arroyo Grande seems to have a little bit more business friendly component with the rollout with that. I would like to consider the possibility of seeing if there is a financial floor, for lack of a better term, to see if there is an opportunity to with concurrence to see if there's a hardship floor that would end up being a ceiling for some of those businesses that we could exempt that while giving them an additional length of time to for the effective date of the ordinance to come in. And then to Ms. Savannah Cooper's comment about straws, the Integrated Waste Management Authority, which I am the representative on that, and the group as a whole is supportive of, but has chosen to have the cities enact the ordinances. But there is a straw ordinance that has been brought forward and approved and rolled out to the cities, because there is, it's some astronomically high number of straws that get into the landfills each day, never having been used. So I'd actually be supportive of that as a voluntary thing from that perspective. Don't basically it's an education for restaurants. Don't give out a straw and someone asks unless they ask you for it. Hmm. So in which case that solves a number of straws going out into the environment. So. But I guess those would be the things that I have. Is I'd like to fashion the preliminary ordinance off of Arroyo Grande with a determination for a threshold for hardship, and then potentially maybe a longer rollout date. And then depending upon how we move forward here, I'd also be in favor of going back to the Integrated Waste Management Authority as a group and recommending that we have a program or some grant authority that says, okay, now that we've passed that magical threshold of cities that were over 50%, let's have a consortium do research to see what the alternatives are, to see what the grant programs might be for the businesses, so that there isn't a specific hardship for businesses if that can be rolled out, so that it does address our business community's impacts as well.
Yeah, and as our representative, do you want to speak about that a little bit? Because I know we are kind of that city on the cusp to making a greater change in the county, if you want to explain that a little bit.
Sure, and actually I did get an education a little bit on the fact that the Integrated Waste Management Authority is not necessarily desirous of having a full county ordinance, because what the intent would be is that each of the cities enact it, and then ultimately the county enacts it as through the Board of Supervisors. So the recommendation is from the IWMA for each of the jurisdictions to take specific action, where the plastic bag ban was the other direction, mm-hmm. And so so this is more of a grassroots up rather than Integrated Waste Management Authority down. And so the thought is that if each jurisdiction, Grover Beach potentially being fifth, Paso being fifth, would then just provide more impetus for the county to then take up the issue as well.
That was good.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I'm not sure if everyone's in support, but I would be in support of, while we're doing this and while we're doing the education, to also, as you said, educate business owners to maybe at least do a voluntary straw program of not giving it out unless people request, and if people are in support of going that direction. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I agree with all that's been said, and I actually stopped myself in at least one business I know that uses a lot of styrofoam, and specifically told them about tonight's meeting, and I think it's telling, because Ms. Bean is here on behalf of all the businesses, but I know if this was something that was going to close my business, I would be here. So I think it's going to be, you know, it's not easy. Change is not easy, but we're not looking to put anyone out of business, and I don't think we will. I think we'll get through this, and I think we'll be better for it. So if staff feels that you all have direction, we can move on.
Yes, staff does feel that we have direction from the council fairly clearly, and so with the direction and with the idea of looking at the AG ordinance maybe as the model for us to build on, then we will take that and do some further outreach with the business community, as we mentioned, and explore some other angles that were brought up tonight and bring that back to the council as part of the formal first reading and ultimately adoption phase, and ultimately bringing in a suitable grace period and suitable time frame to help phase this in, roll this out over time. Mm-hmm.
And just a quick question about the AG ordinance. If you could just enlighten me a little bit on how the 15% hardship provision works. So if a business comes back and says that this is costing me 15% of my budget, I'm just not sure how that works.
Yeah, I don't have that information off the top of my head. Okay. I'm not sure if Judith has any information how that's. We will talk to our colleagues in AG and make sure that we have that spelled out. And maybe we'll also explore the idea that Councilmember Lee had regarding maybe further defining that and defining an upper ceiling that's can be more specific than 15%.
Mm-hmm. I know, for example, I think someone asked, well, do we have another law where people can not, you know, where it doesn't apply if they can't afford it? And I mean, this is somewhat how we've had to do our water conservation fines, that you know, people can come in and appeal, because we do have a lot of small and unique businesses, and maybe in addition to the hard and fast percentages, there should be some sort of way that people can file an appeal or write, you know, write out their situation if it really and truly is detrimental. Maybe that's something we can think about. So, did you wanna?
So for the city of AG specifically, when they say affordable, they mean a biodegradable, compostable, or recyclable product may cost up to 15% more than the purchase cost of comparable expanded polystyrene.
Okay.
So I think that's how the 15% works.
Okay, so it has to do with cost of a substitute product.
I believe so.
Okay, all right.
So before you leave, sorry. So Ms. Curtis, or Dr. Curtis, had mentioned that the EPS or EFS was 4.5 cents, and then a non-EFS was 8 cents. So that would fall under that 15% threshold. Obviously that's double the cost. So that would potentially be something that a business could come forward with and say, this is exceeding that. We're still we give the right to use the existing material.
Yes, and cities do vary. Some don't say 15%, so some don't even have a percentage. So it can just be any city can apply for an exemption if they think it's going to be a hardship for them. So we can also specify that in the ordinance.
Yeah, maybe as we delve further into the ordinance, we should, when we discuss it, maybe discuss that part in particular, because 15% of 8 cents, I mean, you know, that
that's a few pennies.
Anyone could claim a hardship. Yeah, that's what I was thinking it meant as well. So yeah.
So we'll take a look at that.
Okay.
and kind of flesh out some different options for the council to consider.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everyone for attending and offering your opinions and knowledge on this. So let's move on to item 11. We have an update on homeless activity in Grover Beach.
And Mayor Pro Tem Shaw, I'll just set this up and then let the police chief take it from there. What's before you is an informational update on homeless activity within the community. As the council is aware, this has been a longstanding priority issue for the council. You put it on the list of key goals for the coming year, and We have done quite a bit organizationally through the work of your council, through the work of our staff and community partners, and tonight it's really a chance to update the council on key areas of activity and the work that we have done in consult with community partners, and to take your input and possible direction to help frame future discussions that we're having going forward. And with that, I'll have the police chief take it from there.
Thank you. Good evening. John Peters, your police chief. And like the city manager explained, we're going to have a discussion on an update with some homeless activity in the city of Grover Beach over the last about 18 months or so. The update is going to cover from January of 2016 to June of 2017, which is just recently. Again, as the city manager's commented, it is a council priority and goal as established by you guys in the budgeting process. So in 2015, the point in time contact or count was estimated to be about 1,515 homeless individuals in San Luis Obispo County. In Grover Beach, it was estimated to be about 158 individuals that were in our city that were considered homeless. Because of the increase in the homeless population and other activities, there was an increase in vagrant activity that predominantly affected the Grand Avenue corridor as well as the Ramona Garden Park. We heard from many of our businesses and constituents about the activities that were occurring, and a lot of those activities involved peace disturbances, aggressive panhandling, trespassing, vandalisms, and minor thefts. So in 2015, the council adopted a ordinance, and it was enacted for aggressive panhandling to address those issues. We educated the businesses in the city on how that ordinance was going to affect business, as well as educating the individuals that were panhandling. I'm happy to say that a year or so later, there's very few complaints of aggressive panhandling, and once the individuals are contacted by officers and explain the ordinance, the behavior stops. So that ordinance has been pretty effective in helping us in combating vagrant activity and harassment of people who are just in your local businesses. The police department also implemented several community policing programs. One was the community camera program, which was started in partnership with a few businesses here in town. It allowed us to put about 40 cameras throughout the city in trouble spots that were consistently having police calls for service. We also implemented a foot patrol program, and we re-implemented or reinvigorated the bicycle patrol program through a community donation as well as police grant funds. These three programs were actually funded not only through community donations and police grant funds, but also through direction from general funds from the council that had helped to fund the overtime for the officers to go out on patrols. As a result, the officers conducted over 3,000 patrols in the West Grand Avenue corridor and Ramona Park areas, and that resulted in a pretty significant decrease in vagrant activity that was occurring in those areas. Many arrests were made, citations were issued, and behavior was changed. And I personally have gone out a few times and talked to the business owners and managers that are on the West Grand Avenue corridor and have gotten some very positive feedback from them. Also in 2016, by August of 2016, the police department had coordinated efforts with many nonprofit organizations and other government entities to close down two dangerous homeless encampments. One was over by Highway 1, and that encampment had various calls for service, including a stabbing just before it was closed down. And the other encampment was over off of El Camino Real 4th Street, and that encampment had some numerous problems, I'm sure, that most of you are aware of. And as a result of our combined efforts with the nonprofit organizations that assisted and the other agencies, both those encampments were closed down, and several people did accept services and accept help for removing themselves in this situation and bettering opportunities for themselves. So that was a good success there. Additionally, we continue to coordinate our efforts with the nonprofits and the other county agencies within the city to identify the needs of individuals that weren't necessarily in the encampments and that had been displaced because of the closures. And as a result, we came up with a lot of helpful programs that like the Five Cities Homeless Coalition put together. And that also included development of other programs, which they came back to and from the council received the community development block grant funding to help with evictions and preventing evictions as well as rapid rehousing. Collectively, we also assisted, and as Mayor Pro Tem Shaw can attest to, helping to have the first South County MASH event in the city. It was held at the Hillside Church over on Newport Avenue. Very successful event. It was able to help many people. Some of the items that were there were the ability to get driver's license, or not driver's license, but identification cards. There was veteran services. There was counseling services, laundry facilities, and, you know, just a lot of different help from many different entities, businesses, and it was a very successful event. And they're going to be hosting another one here in the South County on August 9th of this year at the regional... Let me see. So we had the, in your staff report, yes, it is the wrong location.
South County Regional Center.
That's right. In Arroyo Grande, the South County Regional Center. Another program that we worked together as a police department with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and in partnership with the Arroyo Grande Police Department was a program that was identified to help at-risk homeless youth. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition has a great program that identifies youth that are at risk, that are between the ages of 16 and 24. And these are individuals who you may hear about that are couch surfing from one house to another, trying to get through school, or may not even be able to attend school because of the situation that they're in. And so the coalition developed a very good program to reach out to those folks to help break that trend from growing into a chronic homelessness problem. The police department, both in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, received grant funding this year. And as part of our commitment to helping the coalition and helping to address these homeless issues, we donated a lot of the grant funding to the coalition to help fund their staff and the resources needed in order to offer products and services to these at-risk youth. Collectively, we go out with them, our police officers do, and if we, our officers out in the field, come across homeless youth that need services, we have an instant communication with the Homeless Coalition, and we now have a great avenue of identifying how to get them services and break that chain of potential continuation into homeless behavior or activity. The city has participated in the HSOC, or the Homeless Task Force. Miriam Shaw is on that task force, as well as the city manager and myself. We have meetings to discuss how we can improve efforts and collaboratively work with other agencies and the county, the cities, and nonprofits to identify ways to help eradicate the homelessness problem in our areas. So collectively, it's been a great opportunity. There is a meeting coming up it's July 21st. So again, everybody will be getting together and trying to discuss how we can get some solutions. In 2015, we move on to the talk about the warming center. In 2015, the warming center had 11 shelter nights, which served about an average of 10.5 people per night. You know, if you remember the 2015 weather, it wasn't as cold and rainy as we just experienced. And so if you see in 2016, those shelter nights increased dramatically to 69 shelter nights, and the shelter was in Arroyo Grande. And on the average, 27 people were seeking shelter each night that the shelter was open. There were times that the shelter could not be open, and there were people seeking assistance. So it's a program that is well needed in the area, and at currently the homeless or the warming center, the warming shelter is not available at this time. There is no identified location for it. So if there is anybody out there that has a good location that can house about 60 to 70 people each night during the bad weather, that would be a great opportunity to come forward and contact the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. They are looking for a good place to put a shelter. From the Warming Center, we'll move on and talk about the Pacific Christian Center. It's more commonly known to people who have been around for quite a while as People's Kitchen. It's currently located at 946 Rockaway in Grover Beach. It's been there since about June 2015. This is a intensification of a non-conforming church use and requires a use permit. Currently, the use permit application is incomplete. It was turned into the city incomplete, and communication back to the Pacific Christian Center had been made by the community development staff, and looking to resolve the issues that are still outlying. And staff is going to continue to recontact them and make sure that we have a resolution to the use permit application and at least get it completed so it can be reviewed by staff. And that will conclude the homelessness update, and I will take any questions or comments.
Does anyone have, do you want to have questions or comments, Barbara?
No questions. I would like to comment that I think we've done a remarkable job in reducing the serious issues in the city. Yes, there's still a homeless population. Being on the board and a librarian and worker at the Grover Beach Community Library, which backs up to Ramona Park, we have anywhere between 4 and 6 people that use the park during the day. They mind their own business. They don't harass people as compared with a year ago, 2 years ago. People were afraid to be in or near the park, and the change has been really remarkable, and I really give you guys credit.
Thank you.
Councilmember Peterson?
No questions.
No questions at this point.
Okay. I thank you for the update going along with it. I wanted to see if council members had anything else they wanted me to bring up. I'm going to be meeting with the South County Task Force on Friday. The two main things that I plan to talk about are, one, where are we going to put a warming center? And, you know, going along with that, if anyone, you all know city buildings, you know, much more than I do. If there's something someone's thinking of that can be used, I mean, keep in mind, it's just a night here and there. I don't think we're going to have 69 rainy nights again. Could be wrong. So that is going to be a major topic. And I am going to bring up this homeless youth program. I didn't even know about this. This is amazing. That is so great. And I am going to put Jana on the spot and make her talk about herself and all of you guys, because that's such a crucial time to catch youth when they just need something. They're still in school. They can qualify for tons of services before they get on the wrong side of the law. That is so great. So I'm so happy to hear that. And another thing, the MASH event on August 9th is from 10 to 2 at the South County Regional Center. If you weren't able to come last year, I'd encourage anyone to come. It dispels all the rumors about the homeless that they don't want help, they don't want to do anything. We had over 80 people show up there from age 1 to 90 saying, give me the hoops, I'll jump through them. I do want services, I do want help, you know, and we don't have enough to offer them, but they are there and they're willing to participate. And if anyone, usually I work in the kitchen, so if anyone wants to work with me in the kitchen, I know I'm making it sound so appealing, but usually we just serve food. Sheila from Pismo, she makes all the food and we just serve it. So if anyone wants to be a server that day, let me know and I can sign you up for a time slot. I won't make you do 4 hours, but I just really want to commend you, because I remember joining 4 years ago and being on joining the council 4 years ago, and I'm our homeless services representative, so I work on this a lot. And I mean, in homeless area of homelessness, there's always so much more to do. And I know we always get down on ourselves and we always feel like we're not able to do what we want to do. But I mean, I look at 4 years ago, Ramona Park was overrun with people. And all I heard was, we're never going to find a place for people's kitchens. So you're either going to have that helpful program go away, or you're going to have the park a mess. And that was figured out, you know, and it's being figured out in a way that works. And then, you know, we had these encampments and we had crime going on. And I remember people saying, that's never going to change. That's always been there. And that's how it is. And, you know, you guys got in there and we all didn't give up on it. And 20 tons of debris later, you know, it's not there anymore. So there's that. There's almost $200,000, you know, in grant money given to house Grover Beach citizens. I mean, just so much has happened. All of the cameras that have been put up. I remember the Homeless Coalition saying, we're not sure if we're in charge of a warming center, but I guess we'll have one. And now it's like 69 nights of helping over 1,000 people. Lives were definitely saved. This was a life or death winter. So I can't thank your staff enough for sticking with us. I can't thank my co-council members enough for just being dedicated to this and chipping away at this. And we'll keep doing it. But thank you.
It's a good indication of collaboration can solve problems.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Does anyone have anything to add?
I was going
to
add that I think we have some members of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition board, so I don't know if they were anticipating having an opportunity to speak along with anyone else from the audience as well.
Sure. If anyone from the public would like to come up, please come up and say your name, and good to hear from you.
Hi, Mike Bird, Royal Grande. First, I want to thank the chief. He's been an awesome asset to developing today's plan on dealing with homelessness. We spent decades just playing sort of the Five Cities version of musical chairs, just running them from community to community, and they come back. And you know, it's finally realized the communities are together, and we finally realized that wasn't solving anything. And today we are the youth program that the chief was a big part of, the unaccompanied youth. That thing has gotten off to a phenomenal start. I've never seen any new program begin so quickly and so successfully. And part of it is the ideas that the chief brings to it, and the acting chief in Royal Grande, and a lot of it's probably the fact that it's run by the kids. You know, the staff, the volunteers and staff on that program are the same age as the youth that we're reaching out to. And they have a lot of energy and they have a lot of enthusiasm. And I think that's a big help. The main thing I want to do, though, is if you want more information on this or anything else, Thursday evening we're having open house at the new Five Cities Homeless Coalition office. It's at 1566 West Grant in beautiful downtown Grover Beach. And I'd like you all to come by 5 to 7 p.m. You can see what goes on there. You can meet the folks who do it. You can ask any questions you have. And I'd like to also echo Councilmember Shaw's suggestion that on August 9th, roll up your sleeves, come on down to the MASH event. There'll be plenty for you to do. We spent the day in the kitchen last year making beans, and that was an experience. And I think that's about it. The only thing I just want to reemphasize, if I could please, is the need for a warming shelter location. We have pretty well exhausted everything that we can come up with, and we're not making much progress. So if anybody can point us in any direction, please do so, because you know, I've got the statistics. I've got, you know, specific lives we saved. Literally, we saved lives, and we can document that. You know, so we need that this winter. So if you can help us out in any way whatsoever, we'd sure appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I'm going to iterate one more event for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition that they're so involved with as well is September 13th. There's an empty bowls soup event. So that's going to be St. Patrick's again, I believe. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So it'll be Wednesday the 13th. So there's obviously a number of opportunities to support the organization and to support the homeless services organizations in South County as well.
Thank you. And yes, would you like to come up and speak on this item?
Well, I had been a volunteer the 2015 year when there wasn't that much rain, there wasn't that weren't that many nights, but I know how much it was appreciated and the meal that the church brought. So I certainly hope something is found soon. I'm a little concerned about something. I had an auto accident 3 months ago, and so for the first time, I was totally reliant for a while on public transportation. And much to my surprise, the, I guess, bus 21 and 24, whatever runs up and down Grand, listed a stop at Oak Park Boulevard, which is near me. I guess it's just on the border. But the bus driver said, no, we won't stop there anymore. We're not going to use that because it's being used by the homeless as a place to sleep. So we've taken it off as a bus stop. And granted, I am totally sympathetic to people finding somewhere out of the rain. But I would hope that bus stops weren't taken, you know, shelter for buses weren't taken off because there are people who really need those too. So I didn't know if you were aware of that. Just wanted to add that.
Thank you. And unfortunately, our mayor is our representative on the transit, South County Transit Board. He'd probably have more, but if anyone has insight.
No, I was not aware of that. Specifically, the route was 24 is no longer running, and we put the 27 and 28 up around. And I think that has alleviated a lot of the problem in getting around the South County. But I was not aware that the bus stop. Uh-huh.
There's a whole center there where there's Mike's and the
right.
Place and a very pretty
right.
Bus shelter.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that information. I will check into that on Wednesday.
All right. Yes, thank you. Yeah, please let us know what you hear.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if no one else has a comment, I think we could move on to item 12. Oh.
I have one more comment just to kind of reiterate and kind of hopefully grab some conformity and unity and of everything there is say thank you to the chief and his staff and city staff and also the residents of Grover Beach and the five cities as well. But it's also a big thank you to, in addition to the organizations, also to the businesses out there that that are being proactive and do see something and do call or have put up additional lights around their buildings and have done the little things that none of us see every day that either encourage or discourage, depending upon the appropriate term there, for the homeless residents and the homeless folks that that they can go get the services that they need and are so richly necessary. So I would like to just kind of reiterate something that the chief said with regards to the Pacific Christian location. Is staff continuing to follow up with that on a periodic basis, or is there a plan to continue? It sounds like there was a plan on a periodic basis to move forward to ensure that while there's not a significant number of calls for service, it sounds like there is still an open application that they need to somehow work towards completing or move towards some level of resolution.
That's correct. And I can let Bruce speak more in detail to this, but we were working with the church to make sure that they had the use permit in place to continue offering the service. They submitted a first draft, and it was deemed incomplete and returned to them. We did meet with them afterwards, but frankly, given some other issues and priorities that our department was focused on, they had kind of left that on the side with the idea that we would come back to that to make sure that we responded to them, that we worked with them to try to get them to resubmit and answer the questions and concerns we had. Because ultimately, we have to have that resolved. We can't let that just keep hanging out in perpetuity, and that's where we are now. And I believe we wanted to float that to you today to make you aware of that, so that when we go back and work with the church, then we have that awareness, and ultimately we will work with them to bring that back to us and get that completed.
And just one other question through the mayor for the city attorney, mm-hmm. is our interaction back and forth with the church and their non-complete application is not generating a standing element, so where all of a sudden it would be a permitted use. Is that correct?
The use currently is considered non-conforming, legal non-conforming use. There has been a determination made by staff that the intensification of some of the things that they're doing, or basically some of the programs, is an intensification of its use, therefore triggering the necessity for a CUP. Doesn't give them any standing at this point in time. They're still a non-conforming use. Okay. So they do need to operate under a conditional use permit, so we can continue going through that process and require them to do that. So at this point in time, I don't see any potential legal issues or exposure to the city by our interaction with them and working with them to proceed in that manner.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. If there's nothing else, we'll go on to item 12. We need to do the selection of voting delegate and alternate for the 2017 League of California Cities annual conference. And I guess we won't just draw straws. We'll just go to the city manager.
Well, however the council wishes to choose the delegates is your prerogative. But just to set it up, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. And as you mentioned, the task before the council is to select a delegate and up to two alternates for the upcoming League of Cities annual conference in lovely Sacramento on September 13th through the 15th. I believe all five members of the council are signed up and registered for the conference, so it is to your discretion as to who is the lucky delegate who will vote on the city's behalf. And I will mention that we have not received the resolutions yet, Donna, I believe. So as soon as we do, we will bring those to the council for your review and ultimately direction for your delegate to vote accordingly.
Thank you. I've done it the past 2 years, and I don't really mind.
You'd like to continue doing it?
I don't mind doing it. Usually, it's just that without looking or asking me, my lovely husband booked a trip to New York that same day. So the longer it takes me to get home, the more my mom and dad are in charge of the kids. So I kind of do want to get home that day, as opposed to waiting out the vote, which can sometimes be tedious if someone else can do it.
So he didn't book the trip out of Sacramento?
No. Okay. He booked it out of L.A. So I don't know if anyone else wants to be the voting person.
Well, I think our mayor should be the voting delegate.
Oh, I forgot. Someone's not here. That's true. Would anyone like to be his alternate for when he finds out that he's the person?
Yeah, I think Jeff and Debbie would be ideal for that.
Yeah.
So, I think we're going to say that you're the first alternate.
Because I already offered Barbara a ride. That's why Barbara and I are kind of out of it.
Well, I don't mind doing it. I have family in Sacramento, and I may stay the weekend anyway.
Okay.
So it's not a problem for me.
That would be great. Well, if nobody objects, why don't we say John is the delegate, and if he is unable, Debbie is the alternate, if that's mm-hmm. okay.
And if we need a second alternate, but it sounds like you're
the guy.
I'll be the second alternate.
Yes. So. All right. Okay. Perfect.
Do we need a motion for that?
No. I don't think so. Yeah, we'll just.
Consensus works.
I don't think so. You can do it by consensus.
All right. On to the next. So back to item 6, which was pulled from the consent agenda. I know we wanted to possibly have some discussion on that. This was from Chanel, who's not here, but if you'd like to kind of give us a little intro.
Sure, be glad to. So this item is an amendment to our existing personnel rules and regulations. In 1994, the city first created our rules and regulations, and these are really to guide the day-to-day employment practices of the city. So they cover everything from recruitment to compensation, classification, dealing with issues such as harassment. It's intended as that broad umbrella of personnel policies that we would use in making sure that we are legal, making sure that we're running the very best, most effective organization from a personnel management standpoint. So we have the original rules in 1994. There was an effort started in 2013 to revise the rules, to modernize and keep up to date with changes in law. That effort, as you can imagine, takes time. There's a lot of meet and confer discussions with bargaining groups. There's a lot of discussions regarding management discussions. And then in the middle of that, we had a changeover in city management. And so that process unfolded, and there was a decision made to put a stop on the process until the new city manager came on board. And so we resumed the process earlier this year. We dusted off the changes that were made. We looked again. I had a chance to share some input in the process. We did another round of meet and confer discussions with our bargaining groups earlier this spring. We had a few, I'll call them relatively minor changes regarding the hiring practices and just to further identify our use of salary surveys as part of our process. And those were included within the rules. So regarding salary surveys, since that comment did come up earlier, I hear the concern echoed by Councilmember Peterson. I would say that salary surveys, as she pointed out, are used by this organization and most local government organizations as a tool for gauging the overall salary comparability of the organization. Typically, we look at comparable agencies, comparable in size, in population, budget, FTEs, but also regional and geographic proximity, as these are agencies that we are typically going up against in recruiting and retaining personnel. It really gets into our talent acquisition and making sure that we are competitive within our local market in having a fair and equitable compensation package. So that's the rationale behind the salary survey process. I will say that it is a tool. It does not by itself determine costs or budgets. It's a tool to gauge overall comparability with other agencies. But that there are other factors that go into what we ultimately decide, be it a reclassification salary, be it an overall MOU process. It's one of many tools that we use in gauging what we feel we can do. And I would say that financial capacity, financial resources is our paramount interest as a city. So again, salary survey is helpful, useful information. We were using it tonight as part of the admin assistant classification process as a tool to gauge where we stood in the market. But it does not make decisions by itself, nor make recommendations by itself. And lastly, in comparing to private organizations, this can be a bit tricky, given some key differences between the services provided by public and private organizations, the unique pay and benefit categories that go into each sector of organizations and the different benefits that are offered in each side, and also in the challenge of getting information from the private sector. They're not under the same type of transparency laws and practices that the public sector is under, and getting that information is often difficult out of the private sector. So for those reasons, we do typically use our group of comparison cities as, again, a tool for us to gauge where we stand in the market and trying to be as competitive as we can for the labor market we're in.
I might add one additional comment, too, and that was, as the city manager articulated to you, we've gone through, if not years, of negotiation and meet and confer on multiple occasions. And most recently, this particular provision was specifically requested by the union's attorney. So the union is, in fact, through the meet and confer process, okay with this, as at least in their mind, a legitimate process or methodology for comparison.
Okay. Well, who has questions, comments on this? Barbara, do you have any?
None.
Okay. Jeff, do you have?
I had a couple questions, but they've been resolved. They're mostly grammatical and not substantive.
Okay.
So that it looks per the letter on the dais, the staff is willing to kind of make some of those considerations.
Oh, and Councilmember Peterson, I know you'd wanted to discuss this. Do you have issues to raise after hearing the explanation?
Well, yeah, three. The two easy ones. First is that I really wanted to commend our HR staff member and to wish her well, because I know this is kind of her final swan song, at least here. So I think this is a very, very good document. I really like it as a document. And I also wanted to, I know you'd mentioned it when we met once before, but ask when does the city council remuneration come up?
Right now, I have tentatively scheduled that for the August 21st council meeting. So we'll have a policy discussion around council compensation on that meeting.
And I guess my only two other things. One of my concerns about it is that there are only two sections that actually apply to everybody. All the other, I believe, nine sections, it's stated that they don't apply to everybody. And there are things in those sections that actually probably do apply to everybody, and there are things that don't. And so it bothers me some that we are not specifically saying that, for instance, all of us have to, you know, go through a fair process, or all of us have to. And I think that we are at risk, and as we have been, and I know many cities in the past, of giving a pass to electeds or giving a pass to other folks for stuff that we shouldn't be giving a pass on. So that's my concern, that it's not applicable to everybody, not all of it. And it shouldn't all be. People have different packages. So that's a concern. And my other concern is just that no matter how you justify it, when you are only comparing with one group, and yes, it's the best comparable, but when you're only comparing with one, when this guy's goes up, yours goes up, yours goes up, so theirs goes up, so yours goes up, so theirs goes up. And I think that we end up with government employees who are compensated at a different rate, at a higher rate, where they used to be at a lower rate. So I would still argue that we need to make sure that we are competitive, for better and for worse, in the total marketplace. Because if you're an employee of the city, you can go somewhere else. If you can go somewhere else and get a lot more money, you certainly would. So I'm still feel that would be a safeguard that's important.
Just as a point of question is if I read correctly in here, and City Manager, tell me if I read it incorrectly. There, it says in that I think we're using up to five comparable, so it would be significantly more than one. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
it's actually six.
Six. Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, and then so to your first point, actually, with regards to elected officials versus the other folks that this is applicable to, if I'm reading this correctly, there's it says that anybody above executive management and above is effectively an at-will mm-hmm. employee. And obviously elected officials are at-will because every 2 to 4 years we're put in front of the voting electorate and determine the most appropriate person to move forward. So I think the applicability to elected officials is different because while there's a process for evaluation and so forth for non-at-will, because per the meet and confer and the bargaining units and so forth, executive management is at-will, and there's a process for that. Elected officials and so forth are subject to the rules of the voting ballot. So I think I may be misunderstanding if you're trying to have elected officials be employees of the city. I mean, well, effectively,
we are.
I mean, we're employees, but we're effectively at will. But we don't have the same benefits of the staff.
But that doesn't give us a free pass on some of the things that come up that are very good management and employment rules and regulations. So, I don't think we need to get into the nitty gritty of it. We certainly can. But I think that there are a lot of things in here that we should hold ourselves to.
Which I mean, I think we all do as a matter of course. So, I know the city attorney, are we changing the document? I mean, let's say, for instance, that we said everyone is subject to all of these provisions. That would be a significant wholesale change, and I don't think I'm hearing
what
you're saying there. But mm-hmm. so, but I think we've got the rules of conduct of the meeting. So we've got the rules of conduct of the voters of the city who say who's going to be their elected officials. So to add a third layer, I mean, and I think I may be misunderstanding where you're going with this, because it do you want elected officials to have evaluations? I mean, which and
no.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that it's just important that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I'm not necessarily saying that means evaluations, and there are no two groups that necessarily everything always applies to, but maybe we should have something for executive employees and electeds. And now, you know, the harassment policies apply to all of us, and I think that's a very good change, because historically we've had issues and they haven't applied, and it's been wrong. So I think that's very good. And then there's another section, and I'm losing track of it, that applies as well. I think Section 7 applies as well. So to everybody. So I'm just saying that it's interesting to exclude several groups of people from the rules and regulations, because basically it's excluding several groups of people from the rules and regulations.
And if I'm reading it correctly, they're not excluded. It basically
they're
said,
exempt.
Well, and the way I read it is that they're exempt because they're at will.
And I think part of the thinking from the staff perspective is that certain documents, such as the city manager employment agreement, the city attorney employment agreement, specify the compensation, the evaluation process. Recruitment for these positions, and also the elected positions, are very different than the recruitment for, say, a building maintenance worker or a department director. The change in employment status doesn't really impact us to the same degree, because we're covered under other provisions, either city code requirements or employment agreements or through the electoral process. So that's where staff was coming from, was not that we were excluded from this policy, but that we were included in the areas that were most applicable, including anti-discrimination, harassment, reasonable accommodation, retaliation, things that would impact and cover everybody as part of the organization.
Maybe if I can elaborate a little bit on that also. A lot of these procedures are intended to safeguards for the employees, because employees are not under a separate contract. Most of your executive management and certainly the city manager and I are under an employment contract. And so for purposes of either retention or recruitment, you negotiate the terms and conditions of that agreement uniquely to that individual. Layoff procedures, for instance, don't apply to either one of us. We're at will. And on any given council meeting, you can decide to make changes, you know, without going through the process of procedures, because you've negotiated that in an individual employment contract. So there's a lot of procedures and policies that are in here, safeguards for the specific employees, because they're not protected and don't have the opportunity or ability to negotiate those kind of unique types of employment terms. But we do, and they therefore don't apply to us, and probably shouldn't. But certainly as a policy matter, if there are aspects of this policy you want to see in those employment contracts, you can certainly negotiate those at the time that you negotiate that with any individual executive officer or your city manager or city attorney.
I think consistency is a positive thing, and consistency of rules and regulations. And so if it is part of the negotiations, and we have consistent standards throughout the organization in those various capacities, then I think we're okay. I just don't feel really comfortable with there being stuff hanging out there that it's not clear how that's happening.
Yeah, well, and then going along with that comment, I guess I need some clarification, just because this was just brought up. Which sections do apply to us and which don't?
Number one and number seven apply.
Okay. Okay, So some of the other ones are, okay. So
and there are things in all of them that really I'm sure do apply, and right. things that I'm sure don't. But.
Okay. Okay, I just one other question I would have is, just as this was coming together, does our HR person, do we feel that these loose ends are taken care of by other means? Because I think, and I want to commend you guys for picking up something that's been laying out there since I graduated high school and running with it. And I definitely don't want to see us leave loose ends after that, after such a great catch. Do you know, in staff's opinion and the attorney's opinion, does this cover us along with the employment contracts?
Yes. I mean, first of all, recognize this is a general document. Mm-hmm. It's a general tool, as city manager articulated, for the purposes of us dealing with personnel procedures. But one of the first things that I do, one of the first things city manager and the HR director does when they have an issue, is you look directly to contracts that apply to that specific employee or employment group. As an example, you have a POA. They have a collective bargaining agreement. That trumps this document. So the reality is you cannot make this one size doesn't fit all. Mm-hmm. Your collective bargaining agreements are not always equal. The collective bargaining agreements, if, had you had a fire department, for instance, would be maybe totally different from your collective bargaining agreement with your police department. So the first thing we look at are those specific contracts. We compare them against this, and that gives us a guideline for which how we're going to handle those type of personnel issues. It's difficult to make this document one size fit all, fits okay. all. It doesn't happen.
Okay.
So there are going to be some that are going to apply to police officers. There are going to be some provisions of this who do not. So, again, a lot of the personnel rules and regulations of the city are directly based upon negotiations between those entities and management or the council. So,
thank you for that. Excellent clarification for me. Yeah, thank you.
And just one quick thing to add, that this has been now 4 years in the making, given a variety of different factors. But our intent going forward is that we would take a look every 1 to 2 years, take a look at things that have changed in state law, local laws, be able to engage the council in any conversation with our bargaining groups, and have more frequent updates to our policies to make this a living document. This is where we are right now to reflect today's standards, but labor laws and personnel management changes as well. So this would be a more frequently updated policy going forward.
Okay. That being said, I think we've discussed it. We've had questions. If no one else has a specific question, I'd be ready for a motion.
Actually, I have one more specific question just to kind of verify that we're all on the same page. So in the kind of the planning parlance, where would this document fall? Is it the general plan? Is it a zoning code? Is it a CUP? Is
it's
it
HR.
Right. True. But I mean, is this document the, like you said, the, is this the umbrella that then the specific contracts and the negotiations are kind of, is that, do these supersede that, or are these under that as provisions as it goes, gets down finer and finer points?
I guess, to answer your question based on the way you framed it, it's probably your general plan. Now, your general plan, to the most part, if you have specific plans, those specific plans essentially create a more specific planning. It's a more specific planning document. In the context of charter cities, they actually will trump the general plan. So in this particular case, your POA collective bargaining agreements will trump this document. So for the most part, you'll see a lot of provisions in here. When I went through and looked at it, I raised some issues in my initial discussion with the HR director. And it was discussed between us that there are a lot of provisions here that just aren't going to apply to the police department because they have a collective bargaining agreement that will supersede this. So to the extent you have specific plans, and those specific plans are more specific to a given planning zone area of the city, that would essentially control as opposed to the general plan in the context of, it's difficult. I'm really sort of referring to a charter city as well as a general law city, because in general law cities you have to have a consistency between your plans. But this would be, I would generally say, at the bottom. And as you go up, the more specific types of documents, like your collective bargaining agreements, specific employment contracts, and those kinds of things,
this would trump this document. Okay. So this would be the foundational document rather than the general plan. It would be the foundational document, and then the specific other specific documents, the POA, the bargaining units would add.
From my perspective, the HR and the city manager, we would look to those documents first. If we were dealing with an employee that had an employment contract, that would be the very first thing I would look at, not this document.
Okay.
And then if you were looking at an employee, you know, is an employee part of a collective bargaining group? If so, I would look at that document first before I would look at this document. And then at the end, the last document I would look at would be this one. And I would compare the rules and regulations of all of those. And if the others are inconsistent with this, they would trump them. They would be controlling over this document.
So I'll just give you three examples. And I understand that there's probably not consensus on this, but just three examples under policy. The city is committed to employ in its best judgment the best qualified candidates.
Sorry,
well,
where are you?
I'm on page 21, the top under policy. So that's an example. Of course, I would hope that, of course, the council would want to employ, in our best judgment, the best qualified candidates for approved positions, and while engaging in recruitment and selection practices that are in compliance with all applicable employment laws. So that's one example. Another example is under recruitment, it talks about background checks. Well, I think a background check for a city manager or a city attorney is pretty, in my view, is very important. And I've forgotten what the third one was, but there are things that are they're really good process. Oh, I'm disciplinary. Do we really just want to fire a city manager? Do we want to give him the same fair opportunity to receive discipline and appeal it and all the rest of it? And now I know some of that can come in the contract, but these are really good rules and regulations.
And for a matter of no detriment to our city manager, but no, I do want the council to be able to say through the process through here, through whatever evaluation period, that he is subject to three votes here. So I think we hamper either ourselves or future councils if we say specifically city manager, and again, not the person, the position right now, that if there's a process that is going to take considerably lengthy time and appeal process and so forth, I think that's going to hamper future councils. So I believe we built it into the employment contracts for both the city attorney and the city manager. So yes, I am not in agreement with that. I see the merits to it, but for the at-will employees, I think that's where the benefit of the council and the benefit of the executive management, which we have the final say over, is taking our direction from that perspective. And there may be times where that process is appropriate, and that's where we have the trust and the faith in our executive management team to implement that where we need to. So I'm ready for a motion.
I understand where everyone's coming from. I am really appreciative of the critical reading and critical thinking. I think I was supposed to be the critical reader, being the lawyer up here, but thank you guys. I always, though, felt like when that was my life, that if I did have experts, such as an HR expert and an attorney and a city manager, that are directing me the right way, that I should trust the judgment, because I trust my own judgment of the people that I trust, which is them. And I think, for me, they've put together a great document. So I'll take a motion.
With that, I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution amending the city's personnel rules and regulations.
I second.
Okay. Could we do a roll call, Donna, please?
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Mayor Scholes is absent. Mayor Shaw.
Yes. Okay. That concludes the regular agenda. Let's go on to council committee reports. Who has some committee reports they'd like to share?
Mine didn't meet.
Okay, so none from Councilmember Peterson. Councilmember Lee?
And I just have one, which was the Economic Vitality Corporation, and that met and basically had an update more on a P3, a public-private partnership that Cal Poly is doing for it can ultimately potentially turn into housing for non-faculty, but it's necessary to it generates think about 400 beds for faculty members for the future, and if the faculty are not moving in there, then they can either make it as open to the public or open to students or and with an affordability index associated with it as well. So I thought that was a good opportunity that was coming forward as a public private partnership that and a design build that Cal Poly is moving forward with.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Nichols?
I do not have any committee reports as such. I think I'll save this for council communications.
Okay. I had, long before my vacation, an APCD meeting. So it was back in June, maybe 20th, around that time. And it lasted, I think, 6 or 7 hours, so I earned my vacation after that, because, we just went right through lunch. So we got a report from CARB, who is the state agency that everyone was kind of hoping would resolve a lot of the conflict over the dust rule, and I think instead of really giving us that resolution, they gave more of a five-year plan or a five-year outlook, which was, I think, a little bit disappointing for everyone. Well, everyone saw it differently. Some people saw it as 5 years. Some people saw it as next meeting. So the saga continues. But they did say that by September, they should have more specifics in what can be done based on their plan. And one thing that I personally felt was productive is at the end of the meeting, we, just because I think so many people came and expected something to happen, rather than just receiving a report, is that we took a vote as an APCD that we support our officer to do his job, so that was our one big vote, that yes, we support him to do his job. So we'll see what that brings us to the next meeting. Then I covered an RTA, Regional Transit Authority meeting for John last week. He had a work conflict, and nothing too major, although one thing that was decided is that we're going to have to raise rates for the RTA fare in the coming months. Nothing huge, but there will be an entire month of public outreach, and there will be communication and input from the public, and it's never a fun thing to do, but the last increase was in 2010. But it was a really nice meeting to go to, because there were some users from the adult disability services group in Paso, and their teens who've just gotten out of high school, and they talked about how much they've learned and how much independence they've gotten from public transportation. And I know many of us sit through a lot of boring meetings about certain things such as transportation, and I mean, it really changes their lives. So it was a really good thing to hear and be reminded about. So that was all I had as far as meetings. But, okay, so who has council communications? Barbara, I know you said you had.
Yeah, my capstone meeting is on Thursday, but this came up in the agenda packet. And it's kind of a community thing. It's a success story. Terminally ill homeless man is getting his finest wish to play a gig at Slow Brew with his doctor's rock band. Mm-hmm. They're going to pick him up in a limo from Maxine Lewis Shelter, delivering him to the venue, and he will perform as a guest guitarist with the band Where is Sweeney? Or Where, apostrophe S, Sweeney. It's Monday at 8 p.m. at Slow Brew. Classic rock songs, just a local band. The show is made possible by Dreammakers, a group of volunteers formed to make wishes come true for terminally ill adults in San Luis County. and Dreammakers, which hopes to fulfill one dream a month, has previously sponsored a fishing trip to Alaska, along with trips to Disneyland and Hawaii. And this band gig is his make-a-wish thing that it's coming true. And I think it would be really nice if a lot of people showed up to listen to them.
Yeah, no, that's really great. Do you have anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Well, that's really heartwarming. Councilmember Peterson, do you have communication?
No, nothing.
Councilmember Lee?
Just one, and I kind of alluded to it during the appreciation for the work at the fire station, and I've had an opportunity to talk with the city manager about this, and it's more of a global conversation when we get down to our facility conditioning assessments, which effectively is what we did. We had some facility improvements that were happening at the fire station, and we're going to have a number of facility updates and needs that are going to be necessary for all of our buildings. And so whether it's at some point a future discussion during the budget or at some other time, some of the things that I'd like us to look at is the use of volunteers, much appreciated. So obviously different level of quality versus a professional contractor and so forth. I just want to make sure that we're aware of the needs and the desires of a facility, because I did get a chance to take a look at the work that was done at the station, and again, going towards a quality component of how long that volunteer labor material that was put down is going to last versus again a contractor, and then also making sure that we have the appropriate professional services. Nothing against Mo. Mo's great. He's an engineer. I'm an engineer. I don't speak as architect as fluently as an architect would, who has more knowledge of an inside of a building than I will ever have, and a road engineer or a drainage engineer might. So just want to make sure as we're moving forward with the larger facility condition programs that we're taking that into consideration with either our staffing or our completeness. So it's more of I know it's a kind of a second tier goal for the city right now, but I just want to, I don't know if it needs to rise to a separate discussion, but whether it's future discussion items under the budget or under facility conditions as we're moving forward with this budget, just want to keep those things in mind.
Okay, thank you. One communication that was also brought up in public communications, but I was wanting to bring it up too, was fireworks. And I no longer have small children affected so much by fireworks, thank goodness, and I don't have a pet, so I'm not bringing it really up for myself, but I've been approached by so many people, and so many people on Nextdoor are just harassed mm-hmm. by these fireworks, and we're trying to let people have a good time. It's great for nonprofits, but people are just not respecting the law on this. Mm-hmm. I know we even proactively got out and did a reminder about it, and I know we said last year, especially with the drought, that we were going to agendize to discuss whether or not this should even go on. And I'm wondering if this is something we should discuss or what you guys would want to do.
I think we should, because I've also had a lot of interest. And I do really understand that it is nearly impossible to catch anyone. And because I'm being right down at the beach, it is constant, year-round for me. And much more often at this time of year and at New Year's, but it's there all the time, and it's almost always illegal fireworks. So, but we, you know, I'm even up high and I look down all around me. I can't catch who's doing it, mm-hmm. and we try.
Yeah.
So I think that given how difficult it is, that maybe we should agendize it, because I think that at least people need to be aware that we are taking it seriously.
I would agree with that.
I agree.
That we need mm-hmm. to, because I would like to hear from the public. You know, mm-hmm. do you guys love these so much, or is everyone over it? I really don't know.
That's a good point.
So, yeah.
And I think it, perhaps as part of that discussion might be kind of towards Councilmember Peterson's point, is the fact that the majority of them that we're listening to at this point are illegals. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe there's, and I don't know if there's any stats that either the police chief or the fire chief could bring forward as to what the percentage of safe and sane is versus the illegals as part of that discussion. Again, not trying to get too far down into the weeds, but would safe and sane, or what would us eliminating safe and sane really help the problem?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to know numbers on how much nonprofits are making. I'd like to know numbers on citations, if, how many are even able to be caught, and just like assess the situation.
Great. Well, then I will take that direction and concurrence and be able to work with the police chief, fire chief. We'll talk to the nonprofits and bring back some information for the council to deliberate on where we go from here.
Okay, thank you. And so then we're into city manager's reports and comments.
Great. Well, thank you. Just a few notes since we haven't met for a little while. There's been a lot happening of note. First, just want to mention that our commercial medical cannabis program is evolving and unfolding. Last Monday was our deadline for receiving the dispensary pre-applications, and we did receive 12 pre-applications that were submitted by the deadline. So our staff team is now busily working on reviewing the applications. We'll be conducting interviews with the applicants and looking to bring this back to the council in late September in a ranked list and with the criteria that was set by the council back in June. So we're excited by this process. The response has been strong. I'll also mention that the Coastal Commission last week unanimously approved our local coastal program amendment to allow commercial medical cannabis businesses in the coastal zone. And in their comments, the coastal commissioners referenced the city's work and mentioned that the city did its homework and really did this in the right way. And we were very gratified to get that feedback from the commissioners as well as coastal staff. And it just, again, goes to show that the work that the council has done, the leadership the council has shown, and the work by staff to move this forward has been well-received by others. And we're very pleased by this forward progress. I also mentioned that our street project is underway as we speak. So if you go down Mentone, 3rd Street, here in 8th Street, you'll see the early stages of our massive K-14 street improvement efforts. The work that you see right now is primarily gas line improvement and, in the case of here at 8th Street, water and sewer line improvements. So this is the leading edge of what will be a multi-phase effort over the next several months. The gas line work comes first, and then the water and sewer improvements come, and then the concrete work, the curb and gutter work, and putting in sidewalks in select locations, and then culminating in the asphalt grinding and the paving. So there's a sequence of each of those. So we have the signs up, or many of the signs. We have more signs going up at key locations to let the public know that these are Measure K-14 projects that are underway as we speak and really leading into this summer of construction and improvements for our infrastructure needs going forward.
I get a lot of questions about this. Would you, and I know you gave us, if you could just for the public let people know an update on 12th Street. And where that's at right now, the repairs. Is it done or is it about to be done?
I know that there was some substantial pothole patching done on 12th Street over the last several months. There were roughly 5 blocks of potholes patched on 12th Street. So that was a significant step for us. There's other work that we'll be doing on 12th Street, and I can share more information further with the council. So that's a key need for us. Also, I mentioned that 4th Street from Farrell to Seabright is another area for us that will be repaved later this summer. We're taking bids right now. This is work that's not funded by K-14, but funded through our gas tax funds. So that will come to the council for award of contract in September, and then we will turn that around and move that project forward rapidly.
Okay, thank you.
And then on top of that, just I seem to recall that there was going to be an item coming to the council in August for a more comprehensive discussion on
that's
streets.
That's correct. Yes, August 7th.
August 7th, great. Mm-hmm. And will that also take into consideration the member of the public talked about crosswalks on Oak Park? Is that part of the discussion, or is that a future agenda item?
Actually, that's a good point. That same agenda, we have a traffic safety update coming to the council, so it dovetails with the street efforts that will be shared with the council as well.
Okay, great.
Thank you. And city attorney's reports and comments? Nothing. Okay, no closed session. Well, with that, you have to tell John before 9 o'clock, we will adjourn.